Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener Salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
You've worked hard for what you have. Your money, your assets, your 401k, and home. Isn't it all worth protecting? Nearly one in four consumers have been a victim of identity theft. LifeLock Ultimate Plus helps protect your finances with up to $3 million in reimbursement. LifeLock alerts you to identity threats you might miss. And if your identity is stolen, your dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. Let LifeLock help protect what you've worked so hard for. Save 25% off your first year on LifeLock Ultimate Plus at LifeLock.com/aware. Terms apply.
No, so this guy came up and he sold us internet and he was really friendly. He ate our fried chicken and rice and he was Catholic. No, he just, just chicken that we made. And he was Catholic, and we prayed with him before he left, and he was just this really cool guy, and he was like, yeah, you guys are great, like, I love seeing you, would love to see you some more, and we were like, cool, and I got his number and all these things. And then we, like, missed our install time for different reasons, and he gave me a call, because I had texted him, I was like, hey, can I get reset up for the install? Like, we missed our install date, can you, like, reset it? And he gives me a call, he goes, hello, Ethan? I said, hey, what's up? He goes, hey, Ethan, this is Doug, nice to meet you. And I was like, no.
I thought we had already.
I thought we had something.
Paul, you said his name is Paul?
Doug. Welcome to The Crunch. It is your boy, Ethan.
And I'm Patrick.
I am, aside from suffering from a tremendous personal loss of my friend who once named was Doug, I'm doing okay. How are you doing? Are you surviving, thriving? How are you dealing with this global pandemic?
You know, honestly, doing pretty good.
Okay, great.
No, I'm just kidding. It's luckily for me, I work in a county where the pandemic is not destroying it, which is good because we have a big elderly population. So it's
as big as in, like, it's, there's a lot of them, or the few that you have are really, really fat.
we have a huge elderly population. Like, there's like only three of them, but like they're ginormous.
Yeah.
They're just absolute gigantos, like 6 feet tall. Like, no, 6 feet tall is normal. 60 feet tall. Okay. We're not going to talk about the pandemic, but other than that, I'm doing good.
Yeah.
I'm doing good. I started a financial Instagram this week.
Oh, we're going to rehash this.
Well, yeah, I mean, I already told you about it, but I want to tell the people.
Why didn't you wait until we were on the show so that I could get it fresh?
I guess that's fair.
For the content.
Know.
For the content. All right, let's try again. Okay, tell them about your new thing called Via Financial. Oh, wait, that sounds like a plug. That sounds like a plug.
It's not a plug. I just started an Instagram because I wanted a fun way to share personal finance tips that I know in a faith-based context.
Oh.
And I didn't want to share it on my personal page because I don't know if that's my brand. I posted one of my big things that was a big mindset shift for me was like, being in massive amounts of student debt is not the same as poverty, the spirit of poverty.
Yeah.
There's an attitude at Franciscan, at least an attitude that I ran into, that I had a friend, and it was acquaintance, who he went to Franciscan for the PDP. I guess it's a little too specific, but no, people aren't probably gonna know who he is. He went $100,000 into debt. He left the PDP and so just picked a random major, and he was talking to me about it, and he was like, yeah, I'm like $100,000 in debt. I'm probably gonna be in debt for the rest of my life. I don't know what I'm gonna do with my life, but I can't leave here. And I was like, are you kidding me? You absolutely can. You need to stop going to school now.
Yeah.
And there was just like this, I ran into that problem a lot where people were very defeatist about their money. And then it would morph kind of into like a spiritualized aspect, like, well, I guess like we're not supposed to be rich, right? And it's like, well, yes, in a sense, but also you're not supposed to be like in crippling amounts of
plunging
debt.
Plunging yourself into debt because you got tricked at a Steubenville conference. Sorry, what?
What? Oh my gosh, the amount of times I've heard people say that Franciscan is like a Steubenville conference, it's not at all.
Do people actually, like people who go there actually say that, or people who think that that's what it's like?
People, I've heard that as a selling point. I've heard that as a selling point for Franciscan. It wasn't like a representative of the school. I think representatives of the school are pretty realistic about what Franciscan is. It's a college.
Yeah.
It's a very great atmosphere, you know?
Yeah.
But I think the idealization of Steubenville is a real thing.
Yeah, that's really tough. It must suck to go to a school where it's just like a conference all the time, you know? Sorry, what?
I'm not getting any sleep, and at 10 p.m., my youth minister comes to the door and goes, "Hey, there's pizza," and I'm like, I kept trying to go to sleep, Mark. Okay,
that was.
I have
crazy
a test
thing.
Tomorrow morning.
Every night, it's when you go to the Franciscan University of Steubenville. One thing is for sure: at 2 a.m., you're pounding a five-hour energy with your friend, and you're texting a girl that you met on the bus to get there.
That's just it's such a good joke.
It's a great joke.
Every day at Steubenville at 3:30 in the afternoon, you go into a packed room where Jason Everett makes you sign 6 chastity cards.
That's good. Way to continue.
They have
the
him
bit.
On retainer. They just you just walk in and you're just like, fine, I'll be chased, I promise.
Yes, I suppose. You go into this overpriced bookstore and you're just walking around in awe because you've never seen that many shirts making fun of corporate brands and just putting the Virgin Mary on them instead of the branding.
No, that one's accurate.
Okay.
Walking into an overpriced bookstore.
I have been to the Franciscan bookstore, and that is what it's like.
And you can buy the Catholic card game featuring the Crunch expansion pack.
Isn't that crazy that something that we made, we were in the game, and then it got sold in stores?
I know. It's crazy.
Cool.
So speaking of Steubenville conferences, we got a great show coming up for you.
We have an interesting
Dr. Ethan's Dating Corner at the end of the show.
Stay tuned.
Never mind. I don't know how to transition into Hot Take Time Machine.
Try again.
I was gonna say, speaking of texting a girl you met on a bus, we got a little bit of a flashback into Patrick's high school love life coming up on the Hot Take Time Machine.
Okay.
Welcome to the Hot Take Time Machine. The Hot Take Time Machine is the part of the show where we take a look back at the prime of our social media posting lives. If you have a hot take that's 5 years or older, send it to us. info@thecrunchcast.com. Ethan, you got a hot take for us?
I found one really, really quick. I guess the other one that I think is pretty funny is it's a screenshot of Anthony Fantano when he was doing his meme reviews.
Classic.
And the caption is from September 1st, 2016. It says, "Internet, quote, Mother Teresa forced people to suffer, murdered people, was a hypocrite, and also extremely stupid. And then me." And it's a picture of Anthony Fantano wearing his beanie and holding a microphone with the sunglasses on. And he's got text on the screen that says, "1, you're an asshole. 2, you're wrong." I thought that was pretty good. Not very much.
That's beautiful.
Not very much love on that one. Asshole is also spelled wrong. It's spelled with 2 A's and 2 S's. So it's not a swear for me to say it.
It's not a swear word. I think that's just because I don't think people are aware of how strongly actually Mother Teresa was like really problematic. I don't think people realize how strong of an opinion that was when she was alive.
Yeah.
Cause like it was more of a thing.
Everybody, she was Time Person of the Year. Everybody just loved her. You know?
Yeah, and so like there was a huge like, I mean, if Rick and Morty had been on, it would have been those guys, you know? Mm-hmm. It like Rick and Morty t-shirt, fedora, guitar in the back that they don't know how to play. You know, actually Mother Teresa was like really bad. Like she suffered and like it's horrible. Richard Dawkins was the guy that kind of Richard Dawkins is the guy that popularized the Mother Teresa.
It was either Richard Dawkins or Christopher Hitchens.
One of those two boys.
Yeah. They were saying like they were frustrated because she had hundreds of millions of dollars donated and she never helped anyone get better. She just like helped them die. But it's like that was her whole deal. That was her whole thing.
Yeah. It's like they were dying.
Helping people die with dignity. Not necessarily solving everybody's problems.
Yeah, also the weird thing about having money doesn't necessarily make medicine appear.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing, is she couldn't just, there are probably lots of impediments to building a super nice hospital in Calcutta.
Yeah, it's like, and if she could have had $124 million, if $124 million would have built a state of the art hospital in Calcutta and saved a bunch of people, why hasn't America done it yet?
Oh, ooh.
People are all like, sell the Vatican. Come on, sell Jeff Bezos. Let's be honest.
There's somebody, somebody out there will buy.
Yeah. Did you know that the Vatican is like, if the Vatican were a country, it would be considered a third world in terms of its worth?
I did know that, but other people just see, they go, big building.
Shiny gold.
Get rid of
Gib. Give to me, because I will give it to the poor, because I'm very holy.
The thing is that they have no, like, exports. Like, there's no, they don't have anything. They're not mining. They don't have any coal. It's just they have the art. And everyone's like, get rid of it. But if they got rid of it, where would it go? Where would it go? Then how would anybody else make money off of it? You know what I mean? There's no.
Yeah.
It's whatever. It's a dumb thing.
It's like art belongs to the church because the church belongs to everybody. Art belongs in churches so that because here's the thing. If we sold all those paintings, those beautiful paintings would be locked up in some rich dude's living room above a bearskin rug.
And then we'd have even more reason to sell Jeff Bezos. It all goes back to the beginning.
Listen, that guy built the most expensive house in California just because. You tell me he wouldn't buy Caravaggio's The Conversion of St. Paul just because?
Did he really? Build the biggest house in California?
He bought the biggest house. I think it was like $500
million. $500
million
house.
It was a five and there was a million. It may have been $50
million. $50 million house.
Just a $50 million house. He's worth like $200 billion.
Well, yeah.
So...
they say you should have about a third of your money going towards your mortgage.
Jeff Bezos. it's a fourth of your take-home pay goes towards your living situation. So Jeff Bezos buys America with a fourth of his take-home pay. Yeah, did you know that if you took Jeff Bezos, you could actually cut him up into 200 people that shouldn't exist and shouldn't have all the money they have?
Please don't cut up Jeff Bezos. This is a children's
podcast.
Please
don't cut up Jeff Bezos.
Patrick, I need your hot take, please.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, I totally forgot we were in a different segment because we quit. So this hot take comes to us. I'm gonna read a guest's hot take first, and then I'll read mine. This one comes to us from Scott, all the way back in 2011. This is a big old time machine. He says, "How come it's always the fake people saying people are too fake?" Which is a great 2011 take, Scott. Ethan, why are the fake people always talking about people that are too fake?
Patrick.
Yes, hi.
I feel like Woody at the end of the second act in Toy Story, when all of the animals on the other side, or all the toys, they're closing the blinds and he's over there saying like, "No, I didn't kill Buzz, he's right here." Cuz I can still hear you when you can't hear me. And so I'm like, "No, don't leave. Don't go." And then you hang up and I'm like, "No."
No. Okay, so you heard my question, how come it's always fake people who are saying people are too fake?
Yeah, it's because they look into the mirror and they look at themselves and then their eyes see what they needed to see in order to know what they had to see in others.
Yeah.
And then once they realize that, they just called it out. You know, it's not a big deal. I'm just out here. I'm grinding. You know, I'm trying to make something for myself, trying to pull myself up by my bootstraps, you know, and I don't have time for those fake people. You know, Marilyn Monroe said, what was that quote that always gets thrown around by Marilyn Monroe?
Marilyn Monroe used to say, Marilyn Monroe once said that well-behaved girls rarely make history.
There's another one that's very famous. If you can't accept me at my worst, don't whatever. Yeah, that one.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, that one that Marilyn Monroe said.
That's always attributed to her. You don't deserve me at my best. That's what it is.
Well-behaved presidents rarely make history. That quote doesn't sound good when you put anybody else in there. Well-behaved Führers rarely make history. I love when you're just talking to somebody on Twitter and they talk about how Hitler supposedly died in a bunker. Wait, what do you mean supposedly? Hold on, go back a second. I was looking through a graveyard of a Twitter fight from like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Someone posted F Hitler. Like, they commented on something because someone like brought up Hitler and that guy was like, F Hitler. And then everyone was like, oh, you're so brave for saying F Hitler. And I was like, no, he's not being brave. He's just like saying, you know, that's fine. And then someone in the comments was like, come on, like, it's just annoying that people keep bringing up someone who supposedly died in a bunker from 60 years ago. And I was like, what do you mean? So hold on, go back. You just glossed over that.
Where would he have gone? The moon?
Where would he have gone? I'm pretty sure we checked the bunker. Like, we didn't just take Eva Braun's word for it, you know?
He put a Hitler-shaped wig on his wife, and he snuck out the back.
He's like, this is always, I don't know.
I'm no, okay, right. What anyway, was this?
This is why I always keep a spare Hitler costume in my closet. Oh, man, I'm really glad no one's in my floor of the office right now, because I just screamed, this is why I always keep a
costume. You ever seen Jojo Rabbit?
No, but I need to.
It's very good. I cried like a little boy when I saw it.
When the rabbit died?
Yeah, when Hitler killed the rabbit and dressed him up like Hitler to make everybody think that Hitler was dead.
I don't know the plot of Jojo Rabbit, but I'm pretty sure that's what happened.
Yeah. I love how all the German kids have British accents.
That's one of my favorite things about...
That's how you know that they're from Europe, is because they all speak in British accents, which...
Phoebe and I are working our way through Phineas and Ferb.
Uh-huh.
And there's a scene where they go to space and they have the milkshake bar in space. Remember that one?
Yeah.
And there's like an Italian alien who's like, ah, this is my milkshake bar. And I'm like, why? I didn't know there was an Italy in space. And then there's like a German. It's like, I don't know why there's a Germany in space. But you know what? I guess that because a lot of them, I guess everybody else is talking with an American accent. So I guess there's an America in space, too.
Is this in the show or is this just you and Phoebe on the couch working this out?
So this is me and Phoebe working it out. Okay. There's an alien with an Italian accent. And I turn to her and I says, why is there an Italy in space?
Somebody was arguing with me today about whether or not Mario was Italian. I was like, this isn't even a question.
Of course he is.
Of course he is. Look at his mustache. He says
he's a Japanese Italian plumber.
He doesn't say it's me. He says it's a me.
Exactly.
And so
there's three different ways to laugh. There's several different ways to laugh. That laughing in, I was thinking of making a TikTok that was laughing in different languages. Uh-huh. America, ha 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 ha. Mexico, ja 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 ja.
Uh-huh.
Greece, he 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 he. And Italy, woohoo!
We were talking about the Game Boy today.
Yeah.
And I was, because we were making that joke. Somebody was like, well, my dad, you know, works for a hospital. I was like, well, yeah, my dad works for Nintendo. Like, I did that bit.
Yeah. Cool.
And then everyone's like, haha. And then somebody else said, well, no, my dad actually, like, works for IT in a hospital. And I was like, well, my dad works for Game Boy in Nintendo.
Yeah, this person's just trying to talk about their day, and yeah, you're, like, doing a bit.
And then I asked the ladies in the room, I was like, did you guys ever have a Game Boy? And they said, yeah. And I said, don't you think that's kind of weird? And they said, well, and they said no. They said, no. You know, why didn't they have a game girl? That's sexist. And I said, no, it's not sexist. It's Japanese.
I don't understand what that means.
It can't be sexist. The Japanese are above reproach. They've created a Mexican, Italian, American plumber. They've created a game.
He's working class.
They've created,
it's very progressive.
They've created a Game Boy, which everyone has accepted. You know, it's not a game person. It's not a game girl. It's just a Game Boy, and everybody's like, "All right, that's fine." They've figured it out somehow. I don't know what they did, but Jeff, they can't be sexist.
Here's my hot take. This hot take comes from February 14th, 2015. You ready?
Yep.
Cool. I'm just checking to make sure you're still there. Of course I can't give my girlfriend a Valentine's Day card without a history lesson. Hashtag, I'm so embarrassed. I'm not going to
do it.
Hashtag talk theology to me.
Oh.
I know, that hurts, doesn't it? So anyway, obviously, this is a look back into who I was in high school.
Was?
Who I am. I was very proud. I looked on Twitter. I couldn't find what the actual history reference was, but it might have been one of those like those memes that would be like, I'm head over heels for you, and it's a picture of Paul falling off his horse. You know,
I think it was probably because if it was Valentine's Day, people were probably like, Valentine actually wasn't a real Catholic saint, you know, blah, da, da, da. And some people were he were. If you look at the Council of Carthage, you know, like people,
yeah, the Council of Carthage,
and I'm sure there was that going on. People were debating the historicity of Saint Valentine, and then you said hashtag talk theology to me, which ended all debate and discussion for the day. Everyone
was like, you know what, we need to pack it up and go home.
Yeah. This kid has taken, how old were you in 2014? That was 6 years ago. You were 18.
Yeah. Listen, I'm not proud. Okay. I'm not proud of who I was.
Just proud of who you are.
Yep, just proud of who I am. So, speaking of history, I don't know if you got this email too, but let's open up some fan mail.
Ooh, yes.
First of all, the Akron girl who sails away,
yeah,
emailed back.
Oh yeah.
And I got her the other girl's email, so we made friends. This podcast, I know you guys have been, here ends the trilogy of Akron, Ohio. Akron, Ohio now no longer exists because it's done. I'm the original girl from Akron who needs Catholic friends, and I'm sailing away soon.
Oh,
and
no.
She wanted us to know that, additionally, ships do actually have normal food.
Okay.
Navy ships really don't, but most cargo ships have a chef and the food is pretty good. Also, sometimes if you're running ahead of schedule, they let you fish in the middle of the ocean.
Wow.
And the chef will make some sushi.
Wow.
That's insane. I had a good laugh listening to you guys make fun of me for watching all my friends sail away. I'll send you a postcard from somewhere cool if I get the chance.
Please
but
do.
I will need someone's address. Hey, you can look up the parish that I work for and then send it there.
You can look up my address.
Don't give away your address, Ethan.
Are you ready? Write this down. What if I gave your address right there and I just... I had it memorized.
That'd be funny.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, she says, have a good day. I'll miss your podcast while I'm in the middle of the ocean. Thanks, Anna.
Hey, thank you for listening to this episode of The Crunch. Sorry to interrupt what I'm sure is a stimulating intellectual conversation, but I wanted to pause the episode real quick to let you hear from some of our sponsors. We will be back right after this.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Waiting on a tax return? Hopefully it ends up in your hands. Fraudulent tax returns due to identity theft increased by 30% in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. Our U.S.-based restoration specialists are experts dedicated to helping solve your identity theft issues. And all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. So we'll reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Help protect your information this tax season with LifeLock. Save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/aware.
Do we have any other questions? You have a topic? What do we got going on today?
I mean, I don't have a topic.
Oh, man.
Not again.
How about this? I'll think about a topic and you sing Crunch on that.
Squiddly-dee-dee-dee. 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 Crunch. Crunch. On that.
He crunches in the treetops all day long.
Crunching downtown.
Ethan Stevie. Ba, ba, ba.
Ethan Stevie.
Okay. So, Ethan, I've been reading a little bit. Doing that whole grad school thing, And I'm in a class on moral theology. And
I know what that is.
One of the things we had, it's morality and the theology about it.
Yeah,
it's
baby.
Not that complicated. So we had to read a couple of books, well, several books, obviously, but the one that we're reading now is Faith, Hope, and Love by Joseph Pieper, the guy who wrote Leisure, the Basis of Culture.
And also,
he wrote three books, one on faith, one on hope, one on love, and there's a compilation that's sitting right on my desk right now. And the book on faith was interesting. It was a philosophical treatise on faith. But hope, the one on hope was more of a theological look. And then we have to compare and contrast that with Pope Benedict XVI's thought on faith, hope, and love in his last three encyclicals, Deus Caritas Est, Spes Salvi, and Lumen Fidei, which was written by Pope Francis officially, but Pope Benedict wrote most of it. Hmm. So the interesting comparisons that I saw, I don't know, Pieper brings up some interesting points about what the opposite of hope is, and how the different ways of presuming. And so I just want to kind of do a little bit of an explanation.
Yeah.
And then I want you to say, hey, I want to talk about where we see this in our everyday lives.
Perfect.
Cool.
Yeah. That's my whole bag is, where do we see this in our everyday life?
And I can't hear if you said cool or not.
I said cool. I think it's cool.
Sweet. All right.
Say noodles.
Noodles.
Okay.
I just hate this so much. You said better internet when?
Tuesday. It's coming. Next week we'll be going.
I didn't even hear the answer. It's cutting
out. It's Tuesday.
It's Tuesday. Oh, praise God.
I know,
okay.
I'm so sorry.
Unironically, praise God. So he talks about how there's a difference between natural hope and theological hope, which we kind of have a sense of that, right? Like,
yeah.
One of them is a theological virtue. The other one is just kind of like a optimism,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And he says that there is no way that theological hope can exist without Christ. So
people couldn't hope in the Old Testament.
People could hope in the Old Testament.
Okay.
Yes. But that hope came from the
from
Christ.
Christ. Yes. Because they were hoping
from the promise of
Christ.
Yeah,
yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
So, because even theologically, all of the graces that were available to people through circumcision was available because of Christ's sacrifice on the cross,
mm-hmm,
centuries later.
Right.
That's a little bit of a mind freak for you.
Kind of.
So he talks about how human beings are in a status viatoris, which is Latin for a state of traveling.
Oh.
Right? Just because we're human beings, we're in a state of transition, right? And for the angels, that status viatoris was instantaneous. They were in a state of transition from their creation immediately into angel or demon. Because in the status viatoris, you go from that to the status comprehensoris, which is the state of comprehension.
Okay.
And that's a state of finitude. It's where something has ended. Does that make sense?
Yes. I'm following you so far.
So,
I love this.
Sweet. So we move from the status viatoris into the status comprehensoris, and that only happens when we die, because then we have the finitude of like, oh, this is what it is. There is no hope in the afterlife, because there's no need. We will either see face to face, and or we will have seen face to face and been completely abandoned by that face.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so in hell and in heaven, they've both reached. The human soul has reached its endpoint. The traveler is no longer traveling. We're no longer pilgrims, whether we're living eternally or dying eternally. And so this attitude of hope is one that necessarily brings us to the end. And just, I want to appeal to our listeners for why hope is so important, because he talks about how hope is this theological youthfulness.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to a friend who works with elderly people with dementia, and she was talking about how people with dementia, sometimes they just say the same story over and over again. Like, this one lady's talking about like her dog and how much she loves her dog, and like that's the conversation she has every single day when she comes in and meets this woman.
Yeah.
She's like, and she'll even say like, hey, what kind of dog did you have? She goes, oh, I had a golden retriever when I was younger, his name was Spot or whatever, like,
yeah,
all of these things. And it just kind of, it was kind of beautiful to see like the youthfulness of the elderly.
Sure.
Because it's a very childlike desire to repeat anyway. So hope carries us in the same way, right? Youth Pieper says is the hopefulness from youth comes from a short past and a long future. Mm-hmm. Because for a young person, literally nothing has happened to make them disillusioned to the world. And there's literally everything is possible at that point in your life.
Right.
And, but he says the theological virtue of hope, you're in the same position because 80 years is like a weekend compared to eternity, like even less, you know? And so for a hopeful person, they have this kind of lifelong youth of there is the past is so short and the future is so bright. Mm-hmm. And so there's this appeal to hope, but there are two ways that we can kind of fall into an anti-hope. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
One of the obvious way is to fall into despair. And this is the problem with hope is when we believe that our status as status viators, right, our status as pilgrims is ended. We don't believe that it exists. Mm. We believe that we have already reached the end in this life. And that can be done in two ways. We can believe we've reached the end through despair, saying I'm going to hell no matter what, and it's useless at this point. Or we can say, I've already reached the end. I'm already going to heaven regardless. And that's what we call presumption. Mm-hmm. So presumption and despair are both anti-hopes.
Wow.
And I want to talk about presumption because he speaks of two kinds of presumption. One that's attractive to Christians and one that's unattractive to Christians, but it's popular. One type of presumption is the type of presumption that's popular in modernism. And that's the presumption of, as long as you're a good person, you'll go to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And that's connected to Pelagianism in a way. And Catholics fall into that with as long as you say your rosary every day, as long as you go to mass every day, you'll go to heaven.
Right.
And then there's the other attractive idea of Christianity, of Protestantism, that says, well, Christ's mercy was totally sufficient for my personal salvation. So I have to do nothing. There's nothing I can do or should even try to do to attain this mercy, which is why When a reporter asked John Paul II, are you going to heaven? He said, I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of Protestants got mad at him.
Yeah.
And it's like, because they don't believe. But that's the thing is, like, they've said, even though hope is a theological virtue, right? Protestant theology doesn't allow for hope in your own salvation because that implies some kind of, it's up for grabs, right? It's like up, there's a uncertainty there, right? An implied uncertainty. So anyway, those are the two ways that we can presume. I don't necessarily want to talk about despair unless you want to,
no,
because I don't think that's something that majority of people are tempted to,
yeah,
when it comes to hope.
Yeah. Well,
but I do think we are tempted to, well, we could talk about
it. I mean, I would just say, like, despair is not necessarily just like covering yourself in blankets and saying like, what's the point? You know, like that's not the only way that despair manifests itself. And so I think we can also look at despair in terms of like the little whiz that it creeps in of, mm-hmm, like, oh, this particular situation in my life, I can't see any way out. Whether that's, so the pandemic, really easy, right? It's like, man, this feels like it's never going to end. I really miss my friends. This sucks. Instead of asking the Lord what he wants from this time, we can just, one way of despairing is just by saying, mm-hmm, this sucks. I'm just going to, like, you know, put my head down and wait for it to be over. Like, that's choosing despair over hope, because you've decided that there's no grace that God wants to give you in this particular thing. And that can be true for lots of different scenarios and situations, whether you're in school or you're in relationships or you're at work, you know, like, you can extrapolate that to, you know, oh, if I just had a better job, you know, and like, this could finally be over and I could have a better job then. You know, like, then the Lord will be able to work in my life. Those kinds of things. And, like, I don't mean this to, like, target anybody and say, like, oh, man, you guys are all in despair. But I think we hear the word despair and we're like, well, I'm not, you know, like, I'm not wailing and sobbing and gnashing my teeth. So I don't have despair. But I actually think that more people tend towards it than we might think.
You brought up a good point. Pieper talks about this in the book. He talks about that the root of despair is acedia.
Mm-hmm.
The spiritual sin of acedia, which is not so much this slothful laziness. And he actually talks about how the Protestant work ethic has morphed the idea of acedia into, well, you need to do the devil hands is the idle hands are the devil's plaything.
Yeah.
Etc.
Yeah.
That's actually a horrible translation of that proverb, but it's the King James proverb version of the proverb. And so it's buried in our consciousness. And so we think that sloth is just, you know, not being industrious, but it's really a spiritual sadness. He taught, and you're exactly right. It's like, any kind of hopelessness and saying, well, this is the situation, there's nothing I can do, and there is no salvation for me, even in a little way, it's like a doorway to open that despair in. So I think that that is something good that we need. That is something that
look
we
at Joseph Pieper taking notes from me for once.
Yeah, look at him. Look at him go.
What a great guy.
But I loved this book. Like this little, it's such a short, it's like maybe like 50 pages, but it's just such a great, and then.
What was it called again?
Pope Benedict. It's called On Hope.
Oh, we're just On Hope.
Yeah, it's just On Hope. He's one of those philosophers who just writes the subject of his book in the title because he's like just flexing a little bit, right. You know? No, I think the title was changed from something else to Joseph Pieper On Hope.
It was probably in another language, if I had to guess.
It was in German, yeah. Making me wish that I learned German. I don't know. I feel like despair is, you're right, it's a little less dramatic than we think it is, and it's more common. The pathway to it is more common than we think.
Right.
Yeah. It's something that we can slip into because we feel like we're stuck on repeat, mm-hmm. or there's really no point in praying because everything's going to stay the same anyway. And he talks about how the person in despair, his prayers aren't answered because he doesn't pray. And the person who's presuming, his prayers aren't answered because he's not really praying.
Ooh.
And it's something that we, because Pope, I think this might be Benedict, but Benedict says that prayer is the school of hope because in prayer you literally learn how to hope in the fulfillment of Christ. I don't know. What's like, you work on a college campus, and most of our listeners are college students.
I do.
How do you see despair play out in colleges?
I think people just, they are convinced that there's no point in the Christian life anymore.
Hmm.
Or even there's no hope in any bigger questions. One of the funniest / most infuriating things that I witnessed the first week kind of back on campus was we had existential questions Monday, which is we had an existential question, and it was Monday, and that was really the only thing. But we had a sign that had a tent, you know, and like we had ice pops and all that stuff. And we had a sign that said, what's the meaning of life? And we just wanted to engage people. This is like day two that we're there because we're just bringing out the big guns right away. And
that's great.
Which was awesome. And that was the question that we wanted to ask was, you know, what is the meaning of life to y'all? And so many people would say, sorry, I can't answer that. I have to go to class, you know? And there's this like just tragic irony to that of like, oh, I'm busy. Gotta go to class.
Sorry, I can't live. I'm too busy.
I can't live. And I was just like, okay, that's cool. But why are you going to class? You know? And it was just this weird, just a weird thing of people had decided that there was no point in even thinking about why they were there or what they were doing because they were so convinced that like you're talking about, right? Like I have to conquer this acedia. I have to go and work and make money and provide and all these things. And it's like all good desires, but they've been told so many conflicting things about what the point of life is. They've been told so many conflicting things about what's the point of existing. What should you be searching after? Is it money? Is it sex? Is it fame? Is it just pure pleasure? The comfort? You know, like they've been told, they're sold all these different lies. And so when you confront them with the question of like which one's actually true, they're like, I don't know. I gotta go to class. And I think that is a lack of hope. Like there's a lack of hope of thinking that like there is really a purpose to all of this. They don't want to confront it. What did it make you think of?
That made me think of my metaphysics class, my sophomore year of college. My professor was like, why are you guys here? And I was like, to get a good grade. And he's like, why?
Yeah.
So that I can graduate. Why? And he kept asking us that question. Yeah. And he was like, this is a very philosopher thing to do.
Sure.
To consistently ask why.
Right.
And it's one of those things that philosophy students hate. And it's one of the reasons why freshman philosophy majors get such a bad rep is because they're constantly like, what does it mean to sit? You know, all that stuff. But I think there's a difference between what my philosophy professor does did and what philosophy professors do in secular schools. Mm-hmm. And it's the reason why those students weren't prepared to answer that question was because there's a difference between the via antiqua and the via moderna. This is like when modernism was kind of in its infancy, that's something that people were talking about. It's like, well, this is the ancient way, this is the modern way. The ancient way of philosophy, well, I'll start with the modern way. The modern way of philosophy is Cartesian. And Descartes was like, I want to be able to know for certain that God exists. So I'm going to start with the thing that I know for certain exists, me. And so he began with himself and he tried to figure out a way to make God exist.
And he said the worst sentence of all time.
I know, worst sentence of all time. I think, therefore I am, which my favorite part, my favorite thing about that is like, you could say that about literally anything. I poop, therefore I am. You know, but that just doesn't sound as philosophical, you know. Right. you can't poop unless you exist, Descartes. Yeah, it's not really that creative, but anyway. So that's one of the things is that he was like, well, I know I exist, so I can know that other things exist based on my own existence. Whereas, so he would ask questions to make us doubt the existence of things that are outside of us. Whereas my philosophy professor was doing something that Socrates did, which is ask questions that make you doubt what's inside of you. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference mm-hmm. between the ancient way and the modern way. Right. The modern way tries to make it so that like the modern way starts with the assumption that the individual is the most true thing, like the person is the most true thing, and everything in me is perfect. Therefore, I need to make sure everything out there is perfect. And so these students weren't prepared to answer that question because they don't ask those questions themselves. They're living their lives on autopilot because they honestly believe, like the rest of moderns, that what I'm choosing to do is right, regardless. Whereas the way of the ancients is like, well, no, we need to make sure that you doubt yourself because there's truth outside of you. And that's what your question was asking them. There, you were like, why do you exist? What is the meaning of this life that you're living? And that's something that's a question that's completely foreign because it's calling into question something that they hold sacred, which is their own selves.
Yeah.
Their own judgments.
And the other way of thinking about it, when you have this inside out perspective, it's really assuming that there was nothing that existed before you and there will be nothing that exists after you. It's like a very,
or if there is, who cares?
If there is, why the hell does that matter? I'm in town. Descartes here, baby.
It's time to go.
And that it's this inherently selfish mindset. But then the interesting thing is when you'd ask people like, what is the meaning of life? The people that did engage with us, they were like, well, I think it's just to be a good person and to help other people. And that people would always like tack that on at the end of like, oh, you got to help other people too. And so there was this like, it's this inside out thing, like you're the most important thing. But then there's this like guilt if you admit that it's just about you, you know? And then
there's the post-Christian world popping.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, I know I'm supposed to be a good person
and I know I should help other people, but then they like, you see it flash through their eyes. They realize that they've done nothing to help other people. and then you're like, okay, so, but like, can you contend with this? And this was like, what does it mean to be good? What does it mean to help another person? And then at that point, you're doing philosophy, and they're like, they want to get out of there as quickly as possible because you've asked them what it is to be good. And it's a lot harder to be good when you have to define it.
That's why I was thinking about this the other day. We're doing confirmation. The pastor is doing confirmation because the bishop can't go around everywhere getting COVID. So the pastor went around to every kid at one of our confirmations and asked them what they did for their confirmation service thing.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad. It was a lot of, I helped at the church.
Uh-huh.
And I did a community thing. Some of them did really cool projects,
sure.
But like, and I honestly wish that we had said no to some of their ideas.
Yeah.
Some of the things they did. Like, nope, not good enough. Cause it's like, I think that if we're gonna do the confirmation requirement, you might as well make it
like a requirement a and not just like a
yeah, not just like, oh, you did it, cool. But I mean that because that reinforces this lesson,
yeah.
Right? That as long as I, you know, I did the thing, kind of. I checked the box with, like, a number one pencil that I barely pushed my hand down. But I checked the box. I made a check mark in the air with my hand. So I'm good, right? And it's like, we're like, yeah, sure. We don't want to ruin your big day.
Your big day.
Yeah. although I hesitate to even require anything of someone who's presenting themselves for confirmation. Anyway, this is not the conversation.
This
anyway,
is a different thing.
This is not the place for this. It ruins hope. Those types of things ruin hope. This idea that you just have to quote unquote do good, that's presumption.
Yeah.
That's presumption of saying, well, that's the thing is you made them confront the reality of their presumption.
Yeah.
And you kind of want to like shrink back from the light a little bit because you're like, oh no, I'm challenging myself. That's the worst thing I could possibly do. And but that's the thing is like, don't we want to live greater lives than this? Don't we want to live a greater eternal life than this?
Don't we
want to be found worthy at the end of our lives?
Well, Patrick, you and I do, but like the average person has never even considered the fact that they can be anything other than a TikTok star, like they're
or anything other than worthy.
Well, yeah, like, well, but the greatest, what I mean is, like, the greatest worthiness that they see is someone who's just famous. Like, that's all that they know.
Fair.
And so.
That's why I've been working on my Renegade. I'm not too late, am I?
You might be a little bit late on the Renegade game, but.
Dang!
I know, sorry.
If I want to be Tracer, follow me on TikTok.
I don't know what that means.
Hello, kids.
I don't know what you're saying. I don't speak that words.
I don't speak that language.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying, though, is like you talk about worthiness, and yes, people have this deep desire for worthiness, but also they have this deep confusion about what it means to be worthy of something. Like these are concepts that don't exist in their mind, and because there's no cultural background for it, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. God bless you.
God, thank you.
God bless you. God, thank you.
You've done a great service to America this day. That's all. I don't know. You keep going with that because I don't know what else to say.
Let me just look back at my notes on this.
Yeah, what
thing.
Do we got in the chamber there?
There's actually the last part of the book talks about fear of the Lord and how hope and fear of the Lord are intimately connected.
Yes.
Because when we have hope, there is also necessarily a fear of loss and a possibility of loss. And he talks about two levels of fear. One is the level of fear that atheists and non-Christians accuse us of the most, the fear of punishment, right? Like, oh, you're only trying to be a good person so you get to heaven. It's like, yeah, sure. That's fine. That's not, I mean, why'd you clean your room when you were a kid? You know, it wasn't because you were just a generically good. You enjoyed the good of a cleaned room. That's not why you cleaned your room, because your mom had a belt. She knew how to use it.
Oh, boy.
That's a fine fear.
Yeah.
My Della did not hit any of us.
Okay. Thank goodness.
But no, that's what I'm saying is like fear of punishment, fear of timeouts or whatever is totally fine. Like that's a human movement. But he said there's a greater level of fear of the Lord, which is a fear of the possibility that the fear of the fact that you could actually sin, like it is within your capacity
to do evil.
Yeah, like you could and like that's the crazy thing is like, you know, you think about people. Okay, like you hear about people that cheat on their spouse, right? And you're like, could never be me. And that's a good thing, you know. Yeah. That's how I feel. Yeah. But it's like, do I have the capacity to sin that way?
Oh yeah,
because I am human. I do. And that's terrifying to me. I would never want that to happen to my wife.
Right.
You know? And so there is a healthy fear of the Lord. But that's the thing is, that's the second level of fear, is that I'm not afraid of, oh, my wife would be so mad. I'm like, my wife would be so hurt.
Yeah.
Like, there's no fear of punishment there. There's a fear of the sin itself. And that is the highest level of fear. And that's like the greater level of fear of the Lord. It's that the sin itself is a greater punishment than the punishment of hell. And so that's where we want to be. That's a sign that we have hope in eternal life, is that when we're afraid of actual sin, not afraid of punishment, that's a sign that we're growing in hope. And that's something that we should kind of meditate on. He talks about how for the church fathers, meditation for Francis de Sales, if you read Introduction to the Devout Life, one of the first meditations he gives you is on hell. Yeah. When I was a high schooler, I was like, that hardly seems like the most important thing.
Oh, Patrick.
But for him and for the church, for the doctrine of the church, when I was in high school,
yeah, I know, gotcha.
I was like, come on, shouldn't we be talking about like Jesus and how great he is? It's like, yeah, we're going to get to that. But first, you need to understand how possible it is that you could burn for all of eternity apart from goodness and being itself.
Yeah.
That's a real thing we need to realize. And he was like, that's how people started their spiritual journeys.
Mm-hmm.
And now
a real sense of humility that.
Yeah. He started like, he's like, that's not, we kind of lost that, not because it's not important, but because heaven and hell kind of became like, you know, hell became like the ultimate timeout, and heaven is nothing more than like a really fancy playground for good people. You know, that's what he talks about. I'm like, yeah, that's true. You know, and I think that we don't have enough. He says that fear of the Lord cannot be reduced to wonder and awe. He almost says it straight up.
Yeah.
Like the way we've translated fear of the Lord now is just completely out of.
We need to be a bit more. We need to be a bit more scared of the old big guy.
No, it's not. It's not of the big guy. It's of sin.
Of,
right? It's like fear of the Lord.
Of the sin that the big guy will let us commit if we choose to be dumb.
I think it's not. I think maybe fear of the Lord. Let's look at it this way.
Yeah.
I think there's two ways that something can be of the Lord, right? Fear of, meaning we are afraid of, or fear that belongs to God.
Mm.
Is the Lord not afraid that we would sin and be apart from him forever?
Right.
That should also be the fear of the Lord. It's like the fear of the Lord, not like afraid of God. But I mean, it does mean that in one sense. But I think in another sense, we can speak of it as fear that is proper to God. That I would, even though he is infinite, I mean, jealousy, we apply jealousy to God. But I mean, why can't we apply fear? I'm sure that God's afraid that we're going to be away from him forever.
Hey,
he knows the end.
He does not want that.
He does not want that.
He loves us.
And in the meantime, I think another two other virtues that he talks about is humility and magnanimity.
Mm-hmm.
He puts those two together. I don't know if focus is as big on magnanimity and humility.
Oh, absolutely.
Cool. Because Franciscan was also on a huge good old M&H kick a while back.
That's what they call it.
Yeah. I was impressed and intrigued and excited that Benedict and Pope and Joseph Pieper were talking about magnanimity and humility too, because I've been talking about it a lot recently.
So they were quoting
and
you.
And he talks about, yeah, they were quoting me. These two old dudes. Well, Joseph Pieper's dead, but Benedict's not, and he's never going to die. He's going to keep writing.
He is
going to keep writing. The first time I met with my thesis advisor, I talked to him about how I liked Ratzinger and Bonaventure, and he was like, he looked at his shelf, he went, hmm. And he turned and he went, do you speak German? And I was like, no, I don't speak German. What do I look like? Did I walk up in here in Lederhosen? No. I wore jeans. I'm an American. I wish I spoke German.
You can get there.
Anyway, am I there? I am there.
Yeah.
Did I cut out?
No, I'm just saying you could speak German if you wanted to.
Oh, you're right. I could.
Yeah.
I'm learning Greek right now, so I'm going to
pause. It's kind of like German.
So yeah, that's magnanimity and humility are two ways to grow in hope, because magnanimity is like earthly hope, and then humility tempers that earthly hope and says, this is not all that it is. This is not all that it can be. And modernity completely rejects the humility and goes straight for the magnanimity, but in that they become presumptuous.
Hmm. I don't know what to add to that. I mean, that just is correct. Like, you just said true stuff.
Maybe every week will just be what I'm reading for my theology classes.
Which is also good. It's a good podcast to do it that way.
It's a good podcast to do that way. Tune in next week when we talk about the second Sinai covenant and the covenant on the plains of Moab.
Whoa. Moab.
Moab.
All right. Can we do the Dr. Ethan's Dating Corner?
We can. I'm getting antsy.
I've been excited all day.
Well, I already had that sneak peek about how there's a Steubenville related Dr. Ethan's Dating Corner, but I'm going to save that till the end, because first I have an update.
An update.
Good old Hey Howdy Hey gave us an update.
Oh, yes. You love
and
the
she
Hey
did what
howdy,
I love
hey.
When people give us updates. They give us recaps, which is awesome.
Perfect.
So Hey Howdy Hey said, as August has finished up, it is time for my update to recap. I became good friends with two guys who are best friends. The one I wanted to talk to, and the other one wanted to date me. Bum, bum, bum. You all told me to build a robotic arm, which sadly I was not able to do. I ended up talking with the guy who likes me. We reached a good understanding between us about boundaries and where we stand. So the guy who liked her, They reached a good understanding. That's awesome. As for the guy I was interested in, that fell through due to some differences between us. Not the ending we were rooting for, but the best one to happen.
Yes.
Here's to being back to school, and I look forward to listening while y'all are to y'all while chilling with homework. Do your homework. Don't listen to us.
Don't say the name.
Come on. Oh, shoot. Sorry.
Come on. We're professionals.
We're professionals. Just bleep the name.
Yeah, I will.
All right, so... But this one's the we got one, and then we're going to do the Steubenville one, okay?
Okay.
This is a real question.
Great.
Okay. Hey, Patrick and Ethan, please make up a name for me. What's her name? Wait, is it a girl? It is.
Yasmin.
Yasmin. Yasmin, I was in a complicated relationship last year, made a lot of mistakes.
Oof.
Nothing incredibly serious, but just sad face emoji.
Oof.
I would like to forget about it. It's been 6 months since I've had anything to do with that guy, but because of circumstances, I find myself reacting strangely to new guys I meet.
Mm.
I have a lot of great guy friends. Two are leaving in a few weeks. One is going to become a monk, and the other one's going to go to seminary.
Okay.
Cool. And I never have any trouble talking to the guys I already know. But whenever a new guy is around, or someone introduces me to a new guy, I freeze up, feel awkward, and don't really want to talk to them.
Some kind of
I'm
new
super
guy.
Chatty to people who know me, so this is not normal. Or she says, I'm super chatty. So for people, she says, it's not normal. Anyway, I guess my question is, how do I make more guy friends, whether or not there's someone I could be interested in, without feeling awkward and scared? How do I keep my brain from immediately thinking maybe he's the one every time I meet a new guy? For context, I'm 21. Thanks for everything. Yasmin.
Wow. Gosh.
What's the diagnosis, Dr. Ethan?
So let me get this straight. Every time she meets a new guy, she falls in love with him.
I think that's just called being 21.
I think, yeah. Well, it's also like you're experiencing what guys experience every single day of their lives. Like this is a
welcome to the club.
Welcome to the freaking club.
Every time I see my wife, I'm just like, oh gosh, I hope she likes me.
So is the only real request is like, how do I not fall in love with boys? Is that the, am I misunderstanding?
I think
it was a very long email.
She says, I find myself reacting strangely.
Okay.
She has trouble talking to guys. She freezes up and she feels awkward and she doesn't want to talk to them. So from what I gathered, one of two things is happening. One, she's super eager to get into a relationship and every time she sees a guy, she's like, oh, what if this is a guy?
Ah.
Or she's still reeling from her relationship six months ago and she is distrustful of guys that she meets.
I see. What you need to do, this is what you need to do. Why are you laughing at me?
She was gonna give her the jokey advice or the real advice?
I'm gonna give her some jokey advice that's real.
Great.
You have to remember that guys are kind of dumb. Like you have to get back into the headspace of like these dudes are just big, lovable oafs. Like we're not scary. Like there's nothing super crazy about us. I mean, I love being a dude. Don't get me wrong. Like shout out to being a dude for life. DFL, dudes for life. But I think one thing that you need to get over, Yasmin, is we're not that impressive. And I think there's a good way. What's a scenario that Yasmin could put herself in to just remember like how. What guys are really like, you know, and maybe kind of reset the old odometer, as it were.
Joining the Knights of Columbus.
What I would normally say is like go to some kind of sporting event. Maybe if your school has some kind of esports gaming lounge, you know, maybe head over there. If there's maybe a billiards tournament going on, just trying to find like any space that you can be with guys kind of in their natural habitat and just observe them and be like, okay, this is fine. Like this is okay. These guys are okay. I'm not super worried about this anymore. Maybe that wouldn't work, but that was my first thought is like, you just got to re-expose yourself to boy.
Just the concept of boy
because you've been so,
you've
missed out on it for too long.
And I think like just speaking from, I mean, okay, so she said I was in a complicated relationship, made a lot of mistakes, etc.
Yeah.
I think sometimes you just have to consciously tell yourself, maybe even out loud, maybe to a friend, like I am acting out of my woundedness right now.
Oh, that's a better advice than mine.
sometimes that's just, I literally heard this advice on a podcast yesterday.
Oh, really?
And it was very good advice. It's like, hey, I am right. It was they were talking about money trouble, and two people who were currently in financially abusive situations were dealing with budgeting together. It was very interesting, and they were like, yeah, we're like, both of our spouses used to like financially control us, and it's a real thing, financial abuse, and they were in a new marriage and they were trying to navigate budgeting together. And it was awkward because every time they'd try to do it, they would get like super defensive and shut down. And the guy was like a counselor, the radio host, the counselor. And he was like, yeah, you just need to say, you need to remind yourself, like, right now I'm being like unironically triggered by this situation. Say to yourself, I am acting out of my woundedness. And sometimes it's helpful to say it out loud to someone that you trust. I'm acting out of my woundedness. Because it's like, again, like we talked about earlier, we're not perfect. And sometimes the real world is being normal and we're being wounded, right? We're being ridiculous. Not ridiculous, but we're being... What's the word I'm looking for?
Ridiculous sounds like a fine word.
Yeah, I don't want to make her feel bad. But I'm being, you know, Patrick, right? I'm being anxious.
Yeah.
And that's my advice.
I think you hire a guy to be with you. And maybe he's from Russia and he could be your husband.
Build a robotic arm.
Build a robotic arm. I wish I had.
Join the Knights of Columbus.
I wish I had better advice. Yeah. Patrick's advice is way better than mine. That's why I have him on this podcast.
That's why I'm Professor Patrick. And so, yeah, I think the thing that you're, the problem you're running into of maybe he's the one. That's a normal problem that people just learn to get over with over time. Like, that's just something that's completely normal. It's even a normal thought. I think you just kind of grow out of it, right?
It just is, then, life experience will help.
Yeah.
The more times you get your heart broken, the more those walls tend to go up and that heart of flesh becomes a heart of stone. And that's when you really get to start living.
It depends. Yeah. Like, when you haven't dated that many people, a lot of people seem like they're the one. Yeah, I know. Okay, it's pretty funny. When you haven't dated a lot of people, a lot of people can seem like they're the one. When you've dated, or when you've tried to at least date a lot of people, and you're like, no, I kind of know what I'm looking for, fewer and fewer people seem like they're the one. In fact, and then once you're married, it just completely...
It's just one person then.
It's just one person. You're like, yeah, everybody, like, sorry, that's not Phoebe. So obviously that's not...
That's what everybody says. So that. Sorry, you're not Phoebe.
Everybody says that. Listen, that's what I'm saying. It's a problem that everybody has. No one can marry Phoebe now. So it's like, that sucks for everybody else. Yeah, I hope that helped. So here's our Steubenville question. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Dr. Ethan and Professor Pat, this one comes from a seminarian. Dun, dun, dun. Dr. Ethan and Professor Pat, I've always wanted to contribute to Dr. Ethan's dating corner, but I'm a seminarian.
That doesn't mean anything, brother. I know lots of seminarians, okay? don't think yourself above this.
I am a seminarian, but why not look back on my high school dating problems? Okay. Dun, dun. So it's actually not. Dun, dun, dun.
Okay.
My name is Joe. I'm a young 15-year-old guy at a Steubenville conference. It's lunchtime, and I don't know where the bathroom is, so I ask around if they know, and a girl offers to lead me there. I'm in the stall, minding my own business. So far, so good. And then I hear one of the girls in my group who recognized my bright red shoes, and she tells me, you're in the girls' bathroom.
What?
Hey, you know how at convention centers,
yeah,
the bathroom, like the girls' bathroom, actually has two entrances?
You know how, like, buildings, the male and female bathrooms are labeled?
Okay, you know how in buildings, sometimes the male and female bathrooms are right next to each other and the entrances are opposite, but in some bigger buildings, when the bathroom is bigger, the entrances are just, like, are two entrances to the same room?
You know how in buildings, the male bathroom has urinals? Okay.
You know how when, that's how I learned, but you know how when... you know how you use process of elimination and you look at, you see what you think is two different bathrooms and you look at one and it goes, oh, that's the female bathroom. And then you go into the other one thinking, oh, by process of elimination, that one must be the male bathroom.
Yeah.
And then you walk in, you see no urinals, but luckily no women. And you're like, I was in the women's room. But then you walk out and you see your friend Ethan and he makes fun of you.
Wait, what? Did that happen to you?
I'm pretty sure that happened. I walked into the women's bathroom on accident at a Focus conference once.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Did I make fun of you?
Probably. I think you were there.
That sounds
anyway,
like something I would do.
So anyway, it was the girls' bathroom, etc. I'm mad, but kind of flirty mad, so whatever. I went to tell this girl where she led me, but there were three of her.
What? I was in the girl's bathroom so long. Oh, okay.
She's an identical triplet. We had a great laugh, but I still had no clue which one she was. On the bus ride home, I get one of their Facebook contacts so we can stay in touch. She told me she's coming into town to watch a movie at the theater with her sisters, but I don't know which one is her. What do I do?
Oh, gosh.
So he connects with this girl, but she's an identical triplet, and he doesn't have, like, the social understanding to be like, oh, which one is the one that I talk to? Because they probably get that all the time.
Yeah.
But she's coming to, like, for, like, a date with him or something.
And they met in the bathroom.
They met in the bathroom.
So, is there a conclusion? Or are we giving advice in the past?
We're giving advice to past Joe.
If you ever find yourself in this situation, step one, remember that male bathrooms have urinals.
Build a cloning machine.
Oh, okay.
Build a cloning machine. So that there could be three of you.
Yes. And then
so
she,
it doesn't matter which one is which.
And then she feels like an idiot because she can't remember which one is you. And then it's actually They're all you. And either no matter what, you win. This is an episode of.
So if you ask
this is
her,
an episode of Phil
her,
of the, Phil from the future. Phil, what is this show?
Phil of the future.
Phil of the future.
But if you go up to her and you say, "Hey, what's your name?" Then she can be like, "Oh, my name is Nancy," and it's like, "I thought we met before." Oh no, sorry, I'm one of the clones. He transferred all of his knowledge to me except for your name, so I needed to ask you your name.
If only there were verbal. Sounds we could make with our mouth communication holes to determine which person was which.
I wish I had antenna.
If only there was a way that we could make sounds that indicated which person we were referring to. And if only there was like a socially agreed upon way to know which person was which using that very mouth sound. And
so if you ever want to know the difference between which person out of two people is the person that you're trying to reach,
if
you know their name, just stand far enough away back from them and direct so that your face is both of them, and then just say, "Hey, Nancy." You can't do it too close, because then if you're looking at the other one, they will be like, "Why'd you call her Nancy?" If you're far enough away, it's like, "Oh, that must have been directed to me because I'm Nancy."
If you ever want to know how many people in a crowd are named Jeff, you just yell, "Hey, Jeff!" And then you'll see like 13 baseball caps go, "Huh?
Huh?" Everybody named Jeff is wearing a baseball cap that just says Jeff.
And now you can go, you can take all of their information because they've marked themselves. You know, this is a great trick. If you're ever in a crowd, I'm not saying you should steal, but what I am saying is if you ever need to steal, if you're in line for like some kind of ticketed event, you just yell, "Somebody stole my ticket." And then everybody like puts their hands where their tickets are because they're, you know, they're dumb. And so then you can see like, "Oh man, this guy's got it in his pocket." So you walk up and you take it. So you say, "Oh man, where's Jeff? Hey Jeff, somebody took your wallet." And then all of the Jeffs go, you know, they start patting themselves down. You take every Jeff's wallet, and then you can start it. Then you can start a Jeff commune, and everybody can have that identity. And then, what was the original point of the question?
I think he just wants to know how he can navigate this awkward situation where one of the three girls has a crush on him and he can't tell which one.
I just taught him how to grift a crowd. You don't need girls anymore. You have complete control.
Take the money that you've earned pickpocketing people at venued events during a pandemic and take to the border.
You have time to practice.
Probably.
You have time to practice.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. Go to the New Mexican border.
I think the easiest thing would be to ask what her name is.
I think it's a funny plot point of a like a movie or a TV show or something that someone thinks they're crossing the border into Mexico, like the police are on their tail, and they like cross cross a border and they get out, they're like, "Haha, you can't touch me, I'm in Mexico," but they're actually across the border into New Mexico so the FBI can still arrest them.
That's a good one.
I think it's pretty funny.
I like it. Just imagine, like, crossing the border, like, people are coming from North Dakota, and they get to Oklahoma, you know, you get out, you're like, "We're here," and everyone's like, "Wow, it was they're shorter than I thought it was," and then they go about their business in Oklahoma, thinking that they're in Mexico, and they're like, "Man, a lot of people here speak English, like, this is kind of weird."
I'm pretty sure that's an episode of Arrested Development.
Is it really?
Yeah, it is. Buster thinks he gets dropped off in Mexico, and, like, he goes to like someone's house and he thinks he's in Mexico, and then like his mom shows up and he's like,
"What are you doing in Mexico?
Mom, how'd you get to Mexico?"
I can't believe Arrested Development and Josef Pieper have been stealing all of my ideas.
I know, it's nuts. Both a successful comedy show and a successful philosopher from the 1930s are both stealing your ideas.
Crazy, especially from this podcast. That's all that we have for the week. I've got to go. I've got a Bible study to prepare. I'm way behind. I'm very behind, Patrick. There's life has taken me by the reins. Patrick, is there anything that anybody needs to know about this show? Great. Do you have anything else for the people?
Do you have anything else for the people? I'm not telling you to do anything illegal, but the whole Jeff pickpocket thing would be much easier with a robotic arm.
Thank you all for listening. Please pray for us. We will be praying for you, and we will see you all next week.
Do people like that bit?
They love it.
Do they?
Oh, yeah.
Waiting on a tax return? Hopefully it ends up in your hands. Fraudulent tax returns due to identity theft increased by 30% in 2023. If you're in a bind this tax season, LifeLock can help. Our U.S.-based restoration specialists are experts dedicated to helping solve your identity theft issues. And all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. So we'll reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. Help protect your information this tax season with LifeLock. Save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/aware.